It's time.
We are not called to be nice.
Sandy Rios, welcome, Sandy. Thanks for being here.
We are often called to be confrontational.
And here with me in D.C. is Fox News contributor Sandy Rios.
And you still like me, or you don't like me, James?
Are you okay? You all right?
I'm a musician. I can't help it.
Longtime Fox News contributor Sandy Rios, thanks very much for being with us.
We have, I think it's 4-1 youth in America wants gay marriage.
Our kids are the product of public schools. No wonder they poll the way they do.
It's time to stand up or we're going to lose everything we have.
Director of Governmental Affairs for the American Family Association.
Step up, speak up, say something, do something.
This isn't a game. This is real life.
Sandy Rios is with the American Family Association.
A pro-life radio talk show host.
Some things are worth fighting for.
President-elect Donald Trump made it official, tapping Steve Bannon to be chief strategist and senior counselor, while Reince Priebus will serve as White House chief of staff.
Reince is a superstar.
The outgoing Republican Party chairman is more of a tactician, and his close ties with House Speaker and fellow Wisconsinite Paul Ryan may smooth the passage of Trump's legislative agenda. Bannon was more the big picture guy as CEO of the campaign and was a lightning rod of criticism because of his role in the alt-right movement, but has the loyalty of Trump after leading him to victory.
The thing about Steve Bannon that people don't understand is that in this campaign, he's been the general, and he's worked very closely with Reince Priebus and the rest of us.
Bannon tried quickly to tamp down speculation about two different power centers in the White House by touting their partnership, while Priebus vowed to help Trump, quote, create an economy that works for everyone, secure our borders, repeal and replace Obamacare, and destroy radical Islamic terrorism. Picking an insider like Priebus may help in Washington, but is also a warning sign for Trump not to lose sight of the outsider message that got him elected.
The swamp doesn't want to be drained, and the swamp will just suck you in if you let it.
All right, that was Ed Henry last night on Special Report. This is Sandy Rios in the morning with you. I heard the news about Reince Priebus yesterday afternoon about 3:30. And I think many of us were stunned and disappointed. We just couldn't imagine Donald Trump nominating Reince Priebus, who is firmly fixed in the establishment camp, although I would say that Reince is more of a pragmatist. But I haven't forgotten the autopsy report of 2012 that he oversaw, which said that the reason that Republicans lost and with Mitt Romney at the top of the ticket was because of our refusal to accept gay marriage. It was because we refused to embrace amnesty. I remember very well American Family Association and others went after Reince and the RNC for that report. So that what was at the top of my mind when I heard that report. Then the second announcement that Steve Bannon would be the chief counsel. He would be the Valerie Jarrett, although that's an insult to him, the Valerie Jarrett to Donald Trump, and that he and Reince Priebus would work together. And then as I began to mull that over, I'm just telling you, I actually think it's brilliant. I do. I actually think this is brilliant. Because Reince certainly is connected on Capitol Hill, and it's certainly true that Donald Trump is not. And it's also true that Steve Bannon has been a firebrand against the establishment. Breitbart has gone after Paul Ryan, endorsed his opponent in the did everything they could to help his opponent in the primary. And so they are really, they are very, a very interesting pair. And in many ways, the chief of staff position is a staffer. And that's kind of an administrative job. Doesn't mean he won't, Reince Priebus won't have anything to say about content. But the most powerful position in terms of content and choices really is that of Steve Bannon's. And I have to say, just so you know, Breitbart has been, was a great partner to AFA as we were targeting Target. I was on their morning show on Sirius Radio many times talking about it. And so, you know, the mainstream media likes to call Breitbart the alt-right. That's their new word to demonize. But Breitbart has done a lot of great things under Steve's leadership. So Steve is a firebrand. He is a hardcore conservative, and now he's going to be the chief strategist for Donald Trump. So that's an amazing story. And, there's so much to talk about. So I'm going to jump right in. This is kind of funny. This was on Drudge this morning, and it's a montage of comedians and pundits and the things they said about Donald Trump in the last few months. Let's listen.
Donald Trump, just last week, he confirmed to the National Review that he is again considering a run in 2016.
Do it. Do it.
look at me. Do it. I will personally write you a campaign check now on behalf of this country, which does not want you to be president, but which badly wants you to run.
Donald Trump has been saying that he will run for president as a Republican, which is surprising since I just assumed he was running as a joke.
Is that people think that Donald Trump is a clown.
Donald Trump is a clown.
I mean, does anybody seriously think that Donald Trump is serious about running for president?
Donald Trump, you know, he's a clown.
A likely moderator, yeah. apparently believes that Donald Trump is a clown.
Which Republican candidate has the best chance of winning the general election?
Of the declared ones right now, Donald Trump.
President Obama will go down as perhaps the worst president in the history of the United States! @RealDonaldTrump. Well, @RealDonaldTrump. At least I will go down as a president.
So basically, this is the beginning of the end for Trump.
The beginning of the end. The
beginning of the end?
This is probably starting of the beginning of the end for Donald Trump.
Donald, you're not going to be able to insult your way to the presidency.
The strongest person usually isn't the loudest one in the room.
So right now we have Hillary's about a 75 or an 80% favorite. We have different versions of forecasts you can look at.
The poll has Hillary Clinton up by double digits nationally, 12 points, 50 to 38, a four-way race.
Clinton leading in Florida. Clinton leading.
All right,
North
so that's
Florida.
You get the idea, and it goes on and on. No, we can't play the whole thing, but it's on the cover of Drudge. It's really a great reminder. Honestly, and New York Times, actually, this morning, the publisher penned a letter, not this morning, but yesterday or over the weekend, to rededicate the paper to reporting honestly. I mean, isn't that I'm saying that's really amazing, isn't it? That the editor and the has to come out with a letter saying, oh, now we promise that we're going to report honestly. Last night, Donald Trump was on CBS 60 Minutes, and I wanted you to hear this. I have to give Fox and Friends the credit for these clips, but they are from CBS 60 Minutes. Last night, he was asked about the first thing he would do as president. I'm switching the clip numbers here, Jeff, but we're going to start with number one.
You met with the Republican leadership. What was the one thing that you all agreed you want to get done right away?
Well, I would say there was more than one thing. There were three things. It was health care. There was immigration, and there was a major tax bill lowering taxes in this country. We're going to substantially simplify and lower the taxes.
And you've got both houses.
And I have both houses, and we have the presidency, so we can do things
you
that
can
are
do things lickety
been a long time since it's happened.
What about the pledge to deport millions and millions of undocumented immigrants?
What we are going to do is get the people that are criminal and have criminal records, gang members, drug dealers. We have a lot of these people, probably 2 million. It could even be 3 million. We're getting them out of our country or we're going to incarcerate. But we're getting them out of our country. They're here illegally.
So that was Donald Trump last night on 60 Minutes with his entire family. Not so funny, not so funny. And then he was asked about what he would do about his salary. This is clip three.
We have so much work. There's so much work to be done, so I don't think we'll be very big on vacations, no.
Are you going to take the salary, the president's salary?
Well, I've never commented on this, but the answer is no. I think I have to, by law, take $1, so I'll take $1 a year, but it's a... I don't even know what it is. Do you know what the salary is?
$400,000.
No, I'm not going to take the salary. I'm not taking it.
All right, and then he was asked, last of all, a very important question, and this is clip two.
Let me ask whether any of you think that the campaign has hurt the Trump brand.
Who cares? Who cares? This is big league stuff. This is our country. Our country is going bad. We're going to save our country. I don't care about hotel occupancy. It's peanuts compared to what we're doing. Health care, making people better. It's unfair what's happened to the people of our country, and we're going to change it. As simple as that.
All right. So that's, I could say a lot, but I think he said it all. And interestingly enough, Wanda Sykes, the lesbian comedian, she is hilarious. She was on the stage at a big event in Boston over the weekend, and she started in on Donald Trump, and she got booed. She got booed so badly that she left the stage and gave the audience the finger. So things, I think, are changing. You know, I think things are changing, but not on the streets. And CBS reported just yesterday about an update on what's going on in America's streets. This is Cut 7.
Police used flashbang grenades to push back crowds in Portland.
Someone has a gun.
Tempers flared when protesters swarmed a bridge and stopped traffic, according to witness Brandon Branch.
Somebody got out the car, pulled out a gun, said, "You don't move, I'm going to kill you."
Oh my God, there's a fight. This is terrible. No, it's being shot in the air. Someone got shot.
One person was shot, and two were booked on charges of attempted murder.
Police are showing up.
Last night, anti-Trump protesters marched across the nation.
Not my president!
In Chicago, they rallied in front of a Trump hotel. In Miami, they shut down a freeway. And in Atlanta, they burned American flags.
I understand everybody has their opinions.
On a United Airlines flight from San Francisco to Mexico, the pilot made this announcement after an alleged racially charged election scuffle between passengers.
Nobody's going to change their minds by arguing. And let's keep our opinions to ourselves on this particular matter at this particular time.
No racism, no bigotry!
The protests continued today in New York City. And in downtown Los Angeles, where thousands flooded the streets.
I think that we can make waves. I don't know if we can get this racist fascist out of power, but we can at least make our voices heard. We can keep up the pressure, and I think pressure is important.
These demonstrators tell me they're determined to continue these protests throughout the weekend across the country and arena. There is even a million woman march scheduled for the day after President Trump is inaugurated in January.
All right. So you might think things are just organic, just right. They're just organic. You know better than that if you listen to me. But I want to read to you from Zero Hedge. We will put this on our Facebook page, and I hope that you will circulate it. This is an article by Tyler Durden. Defeated Democratic presidential candidate Hillary Rodham Clinton is not about to go quietly into that good night. On the morning after her surprising and unanticipated defeat at the hands of Republican Party upstart Donald Trump, Mrs. Clinton and her husband, former President Bill Clinton, entered the ballroom of the Art Deco New Yorker Hotel in Midtown Manhattan and were both adorned in purple attire. The press immediately noticed the color and asked what it represented. Clinton's spokespeople claimed it was to represent the coming together of Democratic Blue America and Republican Red America. This statement was a complete ruse, as it is known by citizens of countries targeted in the past by the vile political operations of international hedge fund tycoon George Soros. The Clintons, who have both received millions of dollars from Soros, I'm going to skip that part, are helping to launch Soros' purple revolution in America. The purple revolution will resist all efforts by Trump administration to push back against globalist policies of the Clintons and soon-to-be ex-president Barack Obama. The purple revolution will also seek to make the Trump administration a short one through Soros-style street protest and political disruption. I told you that Mrs. Clinton deserved the Academy Award for her acceptance speech on Wednesday, and I'm telling you, in fact, George Soros and other members of the Republican Party, Nancy Pelosi, Keith Ellison are all meeting in Washington this week to figure out how to take back power. And part of that taking back power is fomenting these riots on the street. That is what they plan to do, which makes all that more important the session of Congress, which is coming up. The Congress is coming back to town today here in Washington. And coming up next, I'm going to talk to Tommy Binion about what that lame duck session is going to be like. Whether Paul Ryan can maintain a speakership. You know that the president-elect has already announced he's going to turn back executive orders. He has a lot of plans. You heard him talk about in the 60 Minutes interview. There are so many things happening, and I have to say, I feel a new optimism. I really do. Doesn't mean it's going to be perfect, but I know that some people are being put in place that will turn this ship right. We need to pray for the president-elect of the United States because I'm sure his family's in danger. They have to have guards all the time. There are a lot of things happening in this country, and, you know, a day can change everything. So let's just continue to be humble about what's happened and ask God what we ought to be doing next. Coming up next, Tommy Binion. We'll be right back. Sandy Rios in the morning on AFR Talk.
This message is provided by Liberty HealthShare.
You can control your health care with Liberty HealthShare.
Liberty HealthShare gives you freedom from health insurance.
You can finally make the right decisions for you and your family.
It's not insurance, it's medical cost sharing.
You can affordably control the cost of your medical expenses.
It's a group of individuals sharing the cost of health care. This is based on shared values.
You are not alone.
With Liberty HealthShare, you're part of something bigger. A group of people who care for and support one another.
Join the movement of people who share in medical costs and change the way you pay for your health care forever.
It's easy. Visit healthsharefamily.org right now. healthsharefamily.org. Enroll today.
Liberty Health Share.
Together, we're changing health care for good. Check out healthsharefamily.org. healthsharefamily.org. Not available in Pennsylvania.
The church in America is in a state of spiritual emergency. Though we have access to more resources and biblical teaching than at any time in history, we are not characterized by the supernatural power of the Holy Spirit. Every time in Scripture, when God's people cried out in humble, desperate, repentant oneness, He responded in favor of their prayers. Every time. Today, across our nation, God is waking up believers from our slumber to earnestly pray for revival in brokenness, humility, and repentance. Since only Christ can save, heal, and revive, let's join together to turn from every sin God reveals to us, pray with urgency for spiritual recovery and awakening, and unite with other believers in spreading the hope of Christ-centered revival.
Unite with others for one night, one hope, one cry. From Lake Point Champion Center in Cartersville, Georgia, Sunday at 5 Central on American Family Radio and OneCry.com.
Hello, Americans. I'm Todd Starnes with this Fox News and commentary next. Truett McConnell University is training students to love the Lord, love the Word, love the Church, and love the lost. Scripture is the foundation for everything they do. It's who they are, preparing students not just for career, but to fulfill God's high calling on their lives. Truett McConnell University offers a wide array of bachelor's programs, some online, and they also have an outstanding Master of Arts in Theology. So if you'd like to schedule a visit to Truett's campus in the North Georgia Mountains, visit truett.edu. As many as 150 teenagers attacked a number of students at Temple University the other day. The mainstream media downplayed the brutality, calling it a flash mob, but in reality, it was a savage mob. Joe Laletta's daughter was among those caught in the melee. He tells me she was surrounded by as many as 40 black teenagers.
I just wanted to cry. I just looked at her. Her face was just all red and black and blue. And she could barely walk.
Mr. Laletta tells me his daughter was left bloodied and battered.
I just wanted to melt. I just couldn't believe my baby girl looked like that.
Now, police shot down reports the attacks were racially motivated. Instead, they said it was just a random event. At least that's what they're telling us. What happened in Philadelphia is a reminder that we live in a very dangerous nation, and citizens must be prepared to defend themselves at all times. I'm Todd Starnes.
Sandy Rios in the morning on American Family Radio.
Last night, and again this morning, I spoke with President-elect Donald Trump, and I congratulated him on his great victory. We talked about the work ahead of us and the importance of bringing this country together. Let me just say, this is the most incredible political feat I have seen in my lifetime. This is something you've heard me say time and again. 7 out of 10 Americans, they do not like the direction our country is going. Many of our fellow citizens feel alienated and have lost faith in our core institutions. They don't feel heard, and they don't feel represented by those in office. But Donald Trump heard a voice out in this country that no one else heard. He connected in ways with people no one else did. He turned politics on its head. And now, Donald Trump will lead a unified Republican government. Look at it this way. Our House majority is bigger than expected. We won more seats than anyone expected. And much of that is thanks to Donald Trump. Donald Trump provided the kind of coattails that got a lot of people over the finish line so that we could maintain our strong House and Senate majorities.
Well, that was just last week. That was the Speaker of the House, Paul Ryan, after the amazing win of Donald Trump for the presidency of the United States. And interesting that Paul Ryan should use the language that he did, because he was certainly no friend to Donald Trump during the primaries. Also very interesting to me that Wisconsin actually ended up going toward Donald Trump, since Paul Ryan is so popular there. It really is a fascinating story. But now, you must understand that Congress is coming back into town, and so Speaker Paul Ryan is coming up for re-election. The House was planning on holding a lame duck session in which they were going to be discussing all kinds of things that many of us were concerned about. There's someone who I always enjoy talking about this. Tommy Binion worked in Congress for a long time, and now he's at Heritage Foundation as their director of policy outreach. No one really understands the inner workings, at least to the House of Representatives, than Tommy, and explains it better. So I've asked him to join us this morning in our first discussion post-election. Good morning, Tommy.
Good morning, Sandy. Thanks for having me.
My pleasure. All right, so Congress is coming back today, right? They're coming back this afternoon, but no sessions until tomorrow?
They may very well have votes tonight. They've been scheduled all year to have votes tonight, the kind of thing where they'll have a few, they call them bed check votes. They want members to be in town, and so they'll have a few kind of non-controversial votes on the floor tonight at 6:30.
Well, my goodness, when you think about all the changes, and in fact, Tommy, let's talk about that. I heard a briefing just a few days ago about the changes in some of the congressional races that I think a lot of us have missed because we were watching the presidential race, we were watching, you know, senatorial races, but there have been some changes in personnel in the Congress. My understanding is that Republicans lost, what, 6 seats? Is that right?
That's correct.
Okay, so of those... of the makeup of Congress, did we pick up, and I say we, I'm talking about conservatives, did we conservatives pick up any seats in the election?
Yes, there's about, while there may have been only 6, there's a net loss of 6, there's about 25 new members in the Republican Party. So 25 fresh faces who weren't here last year, and a good portion of those are very conservative, very energetic, ready to take on the challenge as they see it, understand what the lay of the land is in Congress, and understand how conservatives need to be, how they need to be skeptical of the establishment, and how they need to fight for their causes of that crowd. So I think it's important not just to look at the net gain or loss in the House, but who are the new faces. Some really great conservatives, Ted Budd from North Carolina, Jim Banks from Indiana. These are going to be your conservative champions. I've personally met with them and talked with them, and they are up to the challenge.
Well, that's good to know, and I bet that's good news for the Freedom Caucus, at any which is led by Jim Jordan, and that's kind of the conservative. I don't know if the Tea Party Caucus is still in place since Tim Huelskamp was defeated, is it?
I think that's a decision he has yet to make yet. It's the kind of thing where he would pass it off to another member who would be responsible for continuing it and growing it, but I don't think he's made that decision yet.
Yeah, and at least it's my perspective, Tommy, that the Tea Party Caucus led by Tim Huelskamp were the bravest of the brave. They were the hardliners. The Freedom Caucus is hardliners, but maybe some that the Tea Party Caucus would wish would take a harder stand. Is that an accurate analysis?
I think that's right. I think the promise of the Freedom Caucus, and they are very conservative and have the right, correct worldview in terms of the policies the House of Representatives deal with. The promise of the Freedom Caucus is really their organization. It's the fact that they have organized and put down on paper bylaws that suggest situations in which they would all be bound to vote as a bloc. They have really organized in a way to maximize their impact. It's one thing to be conservative and to have thoughts contrary to the leadership. It's another thing to bind together and act as a group. And so that's, rather than they are the most conservative in Congress, and they're not quite the 30 most conservative in Congress, but they're definitely the most organized. And so I think that's been their real play over the last year.
So I know these numbers are really hard to quantify, and I've asked you this before, but if you were to put a number to the amount of reliable conservatives who are going to be in the House of Representatives, where would that range be?
So I feel more comfortable putting a number in terms of certain issues.
All right.
You know, if you want to say there's a movement conservatives across the spectrum are going to agree with you and I 100% of the time, that's a small number. But if you look at fiscal conservatives who are reliably willing to vote their conscience on fiscal issues, that's near 100. If you look at social conservatives who are reliably going to vote their conscience even against the wishes of leadership, that's a much smaller number, down in the 30s. Some of these other issues, immigration, defense, you know, this, and I think the key measure here is, do you have the correct mindset, and are you willing to vote that way despite the direction that the broader conference is going? And I think that those numbers are in the 30s or 40s or 50s for those other issues.
Okay, so now, Tommy, I started the segment with a clip from Paul Ryan, who, you know, was not campaigning for Donald Trump. There's been a very strange and strained relationship. In fact, he actually mocked Donald Trump, and certainly on the issue of borders, there's total disagreement. And so he comes back to Washington, and I think many of them were shocked that Donald Trump won as handily as he did, sweeping so many states, including Wisconsin. So now he comes back, Paul Ryan, and he faces re-election maybe or maybe not. Now, if I'm guessing, if Donald Trump had not been the presidential nominee or the presidential candidate, the president-elect, I should say, if he had not won that, it might be, Paul Ryan might be a shoo-in, but I'm not sure that he is. Can you explain what's happening over there to sort of determine who the next speaker should be and if it should be Paul Ryan?
Yeah, so there are several things that members who have a stake in this question are going to be reacting to. The first is that immediately after the Access Hollywood tape leaked and sort of exploded on the press that weekend, Paul Ryan had a conference call with his entire conference, all 246 of them, and said, I'm not going to defend Donald Trump, and I'm not going to campaign for him. That's pretty close to an unendorsement. Though he didn't unendorse him, that's pretty close. A month later, as Donald Trump's momentum started to return, as the Jim Comey letter came out and Clinton's momentum started to slow, Paul Ryan did host, I think, Mike Pence back in Wisconsin and said some more positive things about Donald Trump. And then we saw Tuesday night what happened. Donald Trump won Wisconsin. It was a really interesting exchange between, I think, Karl Rove and Tucker Carlson on Fox late Tuesday night or early Wednesday morning about what level of responsibility Paul Ryan bore for that Wisconsin win.
Tommy, let me interrupt you because we had pulled that clip because I was watching live when that took place, and I plan, it's a perfect time to play it. So let's do that. This is Karl Rove, election night on Fox News, election coverage, and you'll hear the voice of Tucker Carlson, and they really go at it. Let's listen.
Winning Wisconsin, he ought to thank two people, Governor Scott Walker and Speaker of the House Paul Ryan, because they have built in that state a political machine through Walker's races that extends from the top to the bottom and is better organized than probably any state in the country. They have every precinct covered. They have all the people. They have all the technology. They have all the enthusiasm and all the leadership, and they've executed. If I were Sean Hannity, I would not be recommending that if Donald Trump wins the presidency, the first thing he does is pick a fight with the House of Representatives and try and get Paul Ryan out. Paul Ryan is probably one of the big reasons why he carried Wisconsin tonight. And not only that, but a newly elected president does not need to start by opening up a civil war with the legislative branch of his party. Because they understood two
Paul
things.
Ryan didn't even campaign with
well,
him.
Well, exactly.
No. Let me finish. Yeah, he did. He spent, what do you
Paul
think
Ryan
he spent?
Is not
Let me
reason.
Finish. Let me finish. Last weekend, where do you think Paul Ryan was? He was stumping the state in a bus tour saying, vote for the Republican ticket. Donald Trump, Ron Johnson, Mike Gallagher.
But he did refuse to.
Carl,
you got to
get
look, Donald Trump.
Sure, he didn't campaign with him. He campaigned on behalf of the House of Representatives around the country, raised $50 million.
Okay. All right,
Carl, look, I'm not arguing against Paul Ryan. I think he's in a very tough spot. I think he's an honorable guy, and I think he'll do his best to accommodate this new world. But it is a grotesque overstatement to say he is responsible for Donald Trump's winning Wisconsin. I mean, that's just
the ground game
was mocking
essential.
Trump. He was making the point very clearly, crystal clear, that he thought that Trump was kind of morally indefensible, which is, that's a real point. But I'm just saying you can't say this happened in spite of the wishes.
And you think the tape, the Access Hollywood tape, is morally defensible?
I'm not saying that at all. You're losing perspective here. I'm just saying.
Despite that, the Republicans are winning tonight, right?
Put his shoulder to the wheel.
I'm not attacking you.
Hey, can I get a flag, something?
Let's be honest.
Hold on.
I wanted you to hear all that because that was Bret Baier trying to get control. Here's Karl Rove attacking Sean Hannity on Fox coverage while claiming that Paul Ryan was responsible for Donald Trump's win in Wisconsin while Tucker Carlson's trying to set the record straight. So, Tommy, I turn it back to you, Tommy Binion. What do you make of all of that?
It's clear that that's a heated issue, that that's something folks are going to disagree on. And it's clear that that's still kind of an open wound. What you have is a Republican speaker, I would say, right or wrong, directly undermining a Republican nominee a month before the election. It turns out that Republican nominee surprisingly won that Republican speaker's home state. And so the takeaways are, various folks are going to have various takeaways from that. But that's the question that 241 members of the House conference are going to have to answer beginning today as the GOP organizing conference begins, is what will be the consequences of that and what will be the direct result of that? And there's a school of thought that says that there should be some consequences and it should be an open discussion. So I would really hesitate to prepare a prediction about what happens in that GOP conference meeting. But this is going to come up, and it's going to be just as contentious as it was there on Fox Tuesday night.
Well, and Tommy, the issue, of course, is certainly greater than Paul Ryan's failure to give a full endorsement to Donald Trump and actually undermining him. There are deep differences on policy, which have caused members of the Freedom Caucus and the Tea Party Caucus and others to try very hard at their own risk. That's why Tim Healscab was targeted by the leadership in the Republican leadership, and he was defeated in Kansas because he was one of the holdouts to try to get Paul Ryan removed. Tell us about, I know this, the answer to this, but you tell us, because you know better than I, what are the things they hold against Paul Ryan on terms of policy, why they would want him out beyond his failure to support Donald Trump?
Immigration is a major one. It's no secret that Paul Ryan favors comprehensive immigration reform, which includes amnesty, and that's something the far right half of the conference, and maybe even more than half of the conference, directly disagrees on.
Tommy, let me interject with another fact. Paul Ryan traveled the country with Luis Gutierrez, the socialist leftist advocate of open borders. Pushing this whole, what we call amnesty, but that almost sounds too innocent to me now, pushing, the lack of enforcement of our laws on the borders causing this implosion. He's all in favor of that, and that's very egregious to many Americans and certainly those that represent us in Congress. Okay, what else?
Well, Paul Ryan is known as a fiscal conservative. He's had budgets for years that make dramatic reforms to the entitlement. I think your listeners should understand it's been a different story since he's been speaker. The last budget Republicans, unified around and passed was in 2015, and the overall spending level was $1.01 trillion. Flash forward to the budget that Paul Ryan tried to advance in his first year in the speaker, and it was an increase of more than $50 billion. So I think he came to prominence as a fiscal conservative and governed a little bit differently. To be fair, that was a little bit of the hand that Boehner dealt him. But his conference did not unify behind that budget. He failed to get a budget passed last year. And that spending issue is still plaguing him today.
All right, Tommy, we have to take a break. Tommy Binion is my guest. He's with Heritage Foundation. He's the director of policy outreach. When we return, let's just get a little more drip and drab of that, of why people object to him being the speaker because of his policies. And then let's talk, Tommy, about this infamous lame duck session. All these guys are coming back to Congress. Some of them will never be back again. This is the time when lots of mischief plays out. Let's talk about what we might see and what might be prevented because of a Trump presidency. This is Sandy Rios in the morning on AFR Talk.
This is a Decency Minute. I'm Bill Johnson. Once upon a time, a traveler could go to a website hosting many different quasi-innkeepers around the world offering to rent their spare room to frugal and adventurous customers. This service was called Airbnb, and it was used by renters and rentees from every culture, religion, and nationality. It still is used by every culture and nationality and by every religion except for decided Christians or other belief systems which refuse to affirm homosexuality or any of the letters in the alphabet soup of sex/gender activists. Users of Airbnb are now forced to sign an agreement, whether they're hosting or renting, to not make their renting decisions based on, among other things, gender identity or sexual orientation. This is further evidence of a culture grown ever more hostile to biblical views on sexuality. May God give us grace to stand firm in Him. This is a Decency Minute. I'm Bill Johnson.
The gay agenda, Islam, liberation theology, aggressive socialism. You ask yourself, how should I respond to these attacks on my Christian faith? How can I share Christ in a sinful culture? Hello, I'm John Nyhoff, president of Wesley Biblical Seminary in Jackson, Mississippi. An online Master of Arts in Apologetics from WBS will prepare you to defend and share your faith in an increasingly hostile world. Wesley Biblical Seminary, where faith and learning challenge culture. WBS.edu.
God created us to reflect His glory.
Created to Reflect is more than a conference. It'll have breakout classes filled with discussion that help you build a biblical worldview. It's designed for the next generation of believers.
The Created to Reflect Conference, coming March 2017. Join apologist Alex McFarland and Sean McDowell at Hope Church in Tupelo, Mississippi. Learn more at engagemagazine.net.
Hi, this is Steve Tiber, president, co-founder of 8 Days of Hope. 8 Days of Hope was meant to be a one-time trip to Bay St. Louis, Waveland, Mississippi after Hurricane Katrina. And then God got involved. And since then, we have been to 9 different states, rebuilt 1,700 homes, and it's all because we love Jesus. God tells us to love Him and love others. And that's what we do, either through 8 Days of Hope or a new ministry called Hope Reigns. Hope Reigns goes immediately after disaster, a tornado, a flood, a fire, a snowstorm. But what we noticed with disasters is right after disaster, there's so many ministry opportunities. We've already been to New York, Illinois, Tennessee, Texas. So if someone's interested in 8 Days of Hope or Hope Reigns, the best place to go is our website, 8daysofhope.com. And even though we might not have an event planned the day you go to the website, if you give us your email address on our website, we'll be able to contact you about future events.
This is Frank Affney with the Secure Freedom Minute. One would think the last thing Democrats want to publicize after their wholesale repudiation by American voters is their party's ties to radical leftists and Islamic supremacists. Yet, that will be the predictable effect of the expected announcement today by Representative Keith Ellison of his candidacy to lead the Democratic National Committee. As a new film entitled The Enemies Within makes clear, Ellison has longstanding ties to communists and others on the hard left. He is also allied with Muslim Brotherhood front groups and dissembles about their influence inside the U.S. government, even as he promotes it. Keith Ellison is the poster child of the red-green axis. Should Democrats select him as their leader, they will not only be further alienating the electorate from their party, they will underscore why it cannot be trusted to shape our nation's future. This is Frank Affney.
Don't forget to connect with Sandy Rios in the morning on Facebook or email Sandy at sandy@afr.net. That's sandy@afr.net. Sandy Rios in the morning on American Family Radio.
I want to particularly congratulate President-elect Trump. I think we all agree this is a stunning election and clearly an indication the American people would like to try something new. And I know the Speaker shares my view that we would like to see the country go in a different direction and intend to work with him to change courses, to change the course for America. He will have an opportunity to fill a Supreme Court vacancy. President Trump will send us a nominee, I assume, early next year. Many of us made suggestions when he put together a list of prospective nominees. He was, in effect, asking for our advice. And I think he will be open to that. And I, for one, intend to take advantage of it. I've got a few suggestions I'd like to make. Border security is important. I think even our Democratic friends realize we haven't done a very good job of that. And achieving border security is something I think ought to be high on the list. Well, I know he's really happy. We still have a Republican majority. And we look forward to working with him. I think most of the things that he's likely to advocate, we're going to be enthusiastically for. Every single Republican thought Obamacare was a mistake. It's a pretty high item on our agenda, as you know.
All right. That's Senator Mitch McConnell, the leader of the Senate, still the leader of the Senate, talking about, you know, his perspective after the election of Donald Trump. The irony that he should lead with border security does not escape me. Tommy Binion is our guest, and Tommy, again, is the Director of Policy Outreach for Heritage. Interesting that they're going right for that, Tommy, when, of course, they have done precious little to do anything about Obama's illegal actions, either in the House or the Senate. Don't you think it's ironic that he should begin with that?
I think it's absolutely ironic. I think that it's interesting. Donald Trump's, you know, whole campaign was based on a entirely different view of the immigration issue than is held here in Washington. We watched the Senate pass the Gang of Eight immigration bill overwhelmingly, where border security was used as a political chip to try to achieve amnesty. That's a very different viewpoint, obviously, than Donald Trump projected in throughout his campaign in the primary and the general. It's news to me that the Congress is willing to go ahead with border security on its own, but it's great news to me. That's absolutely what should be done. Border security by itself. Don't try to trade border security for amnesty or anything like that. Border security on its own, and we know what that means from a Donald Trump perspective, and I fully expect we'll see it.
Tommy, in other venues, we've had discussions about what a lame duck session might look like, and there's been a lot of concern about it. If Donald Trump had not been the nominee, let's just say it had been Hillary Clinton, what would we have seen this week? I'm assuming that we won't see the same things. Maybe I'm making a wrong assumption, but there were some particular things we were concerned about, and what were those?
Well, there's a spending deadline. Government spending will run out on December the 9th. And so no matter who was elected president, we were going to see some sort of bill to fund the government. When Hillary Clinton was expected to win, we were going to see an omnibus spending package that included all kinds of changes for spending. We were worried about a supplemental spending bill, which was going to increase spending again by another, up to $20 billion. Worried about the internet sales tax. Worried about the Trans-Pacific Partnership coming up, worried about all kinds of things. The NDAA is the bill that is likely to pass during the lame duck. Some other odds and ends are on the table as well.
Tommy, let's just for a second, you know, this stuff is so familiar to us, but it's not familiar to people listening. The Trans-Pacific Partnership is something I spent quite a bit of time talking about this, Mike, but of course it's been a long time. But the idea behind the brainstorm of President Obama. I guess if we were to think in concept about the disaster that is Obamacare, the disaster that is the Iran deal, I think some would argue that the TPP is the disaster that would be giving concessions to foreign powers, giving them more power over our trading than they've ever had before, opening more avenues of immigration into this country, and a lot more that it's pages and pages and pages. The president still wants this, Tommy, and where are we on this? What could Congress have done during the lame duck? Just simply taken a vote? I mean, can't the president sign this without their vote? I just don't quite understand that part.
No, so the president cannot sign this without their vote. If you think back about a year and a half, maybe a little more than that ago, the Congress passed what's called Trade Promotion Authority,
which
allows the president to go and negotiate this bill, but requires then the Congress to come and vote up or down on the bill, on the agreement when the negotiation is done before it can go into effect. Now, the time is ripe. If the Congress wanted to, it could go and pass this agreement under the terms set forth by that Trade Promotion Authority bill law now that it passed more than a year and a half ago. I think that's extremely unlikely. Forecasters had looked at the scenario and said Congress is likely the majority of the Congress supports this. The current president supports this. Neither one of the options for the next president supports this. So it could become a thing that could only get done in the lame duck. The way that this election went, I think that that's very unlikely at this point. You know, the other thing is, one of the ways to think about TPP, you're right, it's a massive agreement. It's closer to a multilateral treaty than it is a simple trade agreement. We've got immigration, environmental regulations, labor regulations, all wrapped up in this agreement. It's much more of a sovereignty style agreement than it is a merely an economic thing. And so I think Congress would, the expectation is that they need to put a lot more thought and debate into this than they have currently. And so I think it's unlikely at this point.
Well, so it would seem as though Paul Ryan, who supports this and global interests support this, would really be putting his political future, at least near future, in jeopardy if he should push this through. It wouldn't be a wise course for him personally, and McConnell, too. I think McConnell, personally, Tommy, this is my editorial comment, McConnell, to me, is much more a put your finger into the wind and see which way it goes. He's a tactician. He's not an ideologue. I don't think he really cares that much about what happens. He just wants to win. He wants to keep power. So I think he's more likely to go along with Trump on this. But that's my thought.
And the specter of the lame duck, it's abhorrent, and the accountability goes out the window. But it seems to be at least a little bit more viable in a situation where divided government is going to continue. But if you're a Republican leader in Congress, and a short 70 days from now, you're going to have unified control of the government, doing anything, any compromise before that moment arrives, it just seems insanity to me, and it almost impossible to defend. So I would hope that the slate of legislation the Congress will consider in the lame duck is that much slimmer, given that they're going to do a lot better and have the ability to do a lot better come January.
Tommy, the other issue that I have discussed here, but it's been a while, and that's the whole issue of criminal justice reform, which has divided, as usual, conservatives to completely on the different side of the on a different side of the fence. This is an initiative that the president wants. I'll say again, I'm totally against this. I think that the problem is they want to release criminals. They're claiming that they are low-level criminals that have been unjustly imprisoned, when we know that the crimes they've been committing are not like they have, a smoke of marijuana. These crimes are much more serious, and it risks a lot of really bad people being out on our streets again, which is what Barack Obama wants, and which is what many members of the conservative establishment in Washington want as well. But there's a divide, and some thought that maybe this would be passed during the lame duck. Where does that stand?
Well, what that bill is essentially a compromise between the Republicans and the Democrats. I'll give you what you want if you give me what I want. We'll change up the mandatory minimum scheme in exchange for changing the sentencing regime and changing some of the after imprisonment scenario. So it is ultimately, it was a compromise between Republicans and Democrats designed to be something that could pass. You don't get 100% of what you want, but it could pass in a divided government. It seems to me then, in a situation where a unified government is just around the corner, to be insane to swallow that bill when, as a unified government, you could get something that is much closer, if not all the way, to exactly what you want and includes none of those poison pills the Democrats stuck in the bill. I think that the American people, the president-elect, won't stand for a Congress doing things ultimately against the platform that they ran on, simply because the expectation would be you can do exactly what you ran on under a unified government in January and February. So any of these compromises that have been on the table for 6 years, I don't think stand a chance in the lame duck.
Yes,
I think this is very good news.
Yeah, well, and also just to clarify, Paul Ryan is all about criminal justice reform. Mitch McConnell, not so much. So that's another interesting divide. And we'll be talking about this again, but now you think it's less likely that this is going to come up. Now, the other thing that some of our friends are pushing for, Tommy, is the National Defense Authorization Act, that the military needs to be, that this is a separate bill and the military needs funding. What's going to happen with that, and do you expect that to be voted on in the lame duck?
This is an interesting case. The NDAA has, it's an annual bill, and it has passed, I think, 51 out of the last 53 years. It has an incredible record of getting done often, especially more recently, in the lame duck. It's a massive bill that contains all of the laws, authorizations for funding, and tweaks to the military structure that the Congress wants to make. Now, there's no reason it can't wait. It's not like the military isn't going to have access to funding. It isn't an appropriations bill, so there's no sort of a cliff here where the military is going to shut down if Congress doesn't pass this bill. There's no reason to structure a bill that Obama will sign when you can just as easily wait and pass a bill that President Trump will sign, which will be much more friendly to national security and involve much less compromise with the president. There's a few issues in here, defense spending and the manner in which that's done, some religious liberty protections that the Republicans offered that the president essentially threatened to veto the bill over. These are all issues that fade away when you have a Republican president willing to sign the bill rather than a Democrat president. So it's an interesting case in that it does usually get done within the calendar year, once a calendar year, but there's no good reason Republicans should do this in December rather than wait until they have unified control of the government.
Tommy, I can't believe we only have a minute left, and I did not ask you to clarify the speaker race. The speaker could be voted on the lame duck week, or they could wait. Explain that in 60 seconds if you can.
The speaker gets elected in two stages. The GOP conference will establish him as a nominee. That requires only a majority of the GOP conference. Speaker Ryan has that locked up. If he wants it, it's no problem. However, any speaker must get 218 votes on the floor of the House of Representatives on January 3rd. At the moment, it's unclear that Speaker Ryan has that. There are a few, Tom Massey's one of them, who have come out and said that they will not vote for Speaker Ryan. And so that specter in the future will come to play this week during the organizing conference. But to be clear, if Paul Ryan wants to be the party's nominee, he has those votes locked up. It only requires a majority, and that vote will take place this week.
All right, so there it is. That's what's happening this week, and a lot of changes, and we would be having a very different conversation if we didn't have President-elect Donald Trump, no question about it. Tom Benyon, Director of Policy Outreach for the Heritage Foundation. Tommy, thank you so much for joining me this morning. Thank you.
Thanks, Sandy.
All right, talk to you soon. All right, Sandy. Bye. Rios, have a great day on AFR Talk.
The views and opinions expressed in this broadcast